Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we go into the news you might have been missing. Some political news. That's right. We actually give you the update on Trump versus Biden. And I could tell you from some first personal experience on the ground in the battleground states and actually being there in 2016, there's some stuff that you're not going to want to miss. Our sister organization, Turning Point Action, our 501c4 organization, is hosting the President of the United States in Phoenix, Arizona on June 23rd. You guys can sign up at TrumpStudents.org/convention. That's right, TrumpStudents.org/convention. Or if you guys want to go, just email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you're in the American Southwest, or if you want to go from anywhere from across the country and hear the president address the next generation, you can do that at freedom@charliekirk.com. Email us. Tickets are running out right now. So email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, or you can go to TrumpStudents.org/convention. It's going to be a lot of fun. The president is coming to Phoenix. We are hosting him at Turning Point Action. Email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Also, listen to our sister episode, Devin Nunez. Okay, everybody, buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
So in case you forgot, with all the burning, the looting, the rioting, the protesting, the potential for more lockdowns and shutdowns, there's also still an election going on. That's right. It's a presidential election year. Let's talk about the election. I mean, we've been talking about so much happening right now in the cities of our country and the Chinese coronavirus and how corporations are capitulating to far left-wing social justice causes. Let's actually talk about the election. So Joe Biden is making a huge play for Florida. It's putting Trump on defense in his own backyard, which is technically now his home state. And now this is a must-win state for the White House. Now, part of the strategy is around Val Demings, who's a Florida representative who's a potential running mate for Joe Biden. So Joe Biden can purportedly make a big play from his basement. I'm not really sure how that's working. I think every day Joe Biden comes out of his basement and he asks, "Am I president yet? Am I president yet?" It's kind of like Groundhog Day, but it's much more depressing. So look, the big play in Florida is based solely on fear-mongering about a, quote, second wave of the Chinese coronavirus and the need for a, quote, real leader. Now, President Trump, of course, won Florida in 2016 by over 100,000 votes. I remember tracking county by county. I took personal time off from Turning Point USA. I volunteered with the campaign. I traveled the country with Donald Trump Jr. I was monitoring a lot of the counties as they were coming in the state of Florida. And I remember watching Miami-Dade County, Palm Beach County, Pinellas County very carefully. Longboat, Key area, which I know quite well, Sarasota, Naples, and also the Panhandle. And as soon as I saw that the number differentials in those counties were not the typical Democrat-Republican split and the Panhandle had not yet reported, I said, Donald Trump's going to win the White House, because I was also simultaneously monitoring a lot of the counties in Michigan and Wisconsin. We have to realize that we have an electoral college, but even beyond that, we have an electoral county model, because a lot of these counties are actually the ones that are the swing counties. And even when the counties, there's townships or precincts that are going to make or break the entire trajectory of Western society and civilization. So it's really interesting to think that certain neighborhoods, that certain city blocks are actually going to determine the future of America. Now, President Trump won Florida by 100,000 votes, but Biden thinks he can reclaim Florida like Obama did in 08 and 2012. So here's some bad news about Florida, and here's some good news about Florida. Let's start with the bad news. The recent poll, which again, I don't take these polls that seriously. I don't think they're all completely incorrect, but I think that they could be mostly incorrect. And they also don't factor in turnout. They're also just a snapshot in time. We have to understand that President Trump has been under incredible duress from the media. And I don't want to say that he's under duress. Let's say he's under attack. I think that's probably a more fair way to say it. But look, Joe Biden, he thinks that he can win back Florida. But the bad news for Joe Biden is that Florida, in the whole alleged Democrat wave that happened in 2018, Florida remains strong. Ron DeSantis still won Florida. Senator Rick Scott still won the Senate seat. And he did a very difficult thing, which is to beat an incumbent Democrat senator, Senator Nelson. So Florida has been trending ever so slightly in the center-right direction. So Joe Biden thinks he can win. So one of these polls has Joe Biden at 50%, Trump at 43% in the state of Florida. In Arizona, it has Biden up 1, Biden 45%, Trump 44%. That's actually a pretty promising poll. The fact that Biden is only winning by 1 in Arizona, according to the CNBC Change Research poll, is a huge, actually really, really positive for Trump. And because I'll tell you right now that we're supposed to believe that Arizona is upside down and backwards, that differential I'll take completely. That does not factor in Trump enthusiasm. That does not take the Trump surge. That does not take into effect the Trump surge that is assuredly going to happen in the last 2 weeks, where Trump is able to get a clear and convincing message and define his opponent. That doesn't count all the ad money that's going to be spent, or the ground game, the rallies, all that. So the fact that Trump's within 1 point in Arizona, is I'll take that any day. Now, he should be up. I mean, Arizona shouldn't be contested, but having spent a lot of time in Arizona, Turning Point USA, our 501c3 educational charity, is headquartered in Arizona. Our podcast, we do a lot of our podcast out of Arizona. We're hosting the President of the United States actually coming up on Tuesday from our 501c4 in Arizona. You guys can come check that out at TrumpStudents.org. If you're anywhere in the Southwest, you want to come hear the president speak, we have him coming in Phoenix, Arizona on June 23rd in Arizona. So I know the state of Arizona pretty well. And the fact that this polling, which is probably tilted a little bit over sampling Democrats within 1 point, I'll take it. Now, this Florida poll, not great. Not going to lie. Down 7. I don't necessarily believe it, but that does go to show, I think, that Trump has a Florida focus that needs to happen, that Trump needs to focus on Florida more than not. And I will say that the trend lines have been moving in the general direction that are not favorable to Trump. They've been going in the wrong direction in Florida. Now, interestingly enough, Michigan, according to the CNBC research poll, is that Trump's within 2 points of Biden. I think that's great. The fact that Trump's in 2 points, I mean, some of the tracking polls for Trump had Trump down in the state of Michigan going right into the last days with Hillary Clinton. And I think so. Look, some polls have him down 16 points in Michigan. I don't believe that for a second. In North Carolina, has Biden up 2. But again, this doesn't factor in so many different things: voter registration, voter turnout, voter modeling, late breakers, the base turning out. And we have to understand that if we were probably to accept, and you don't want to say that this is completely going to be the case, but I think this is generally true, this will probably be the lowest point of Trump's approval rating presidency. I mean, I can't think of a scenario, and maybe one will happen in the next couple months, where Trump has been under attack with so many things he cannot control happening around him. I mean, you talk about having the riots, the issue around police, law enforcement, the lockdowns, the less than favorable economic climate, him having to play defense on issues that are not his particular preferred issues. So if you sort of this as a baseline, if you say, hey, you know, Trump is down 2 points in Michigan as a baseline, I'll take it. Trump is down 1 point in Arizona as a baseline. Understand that Republicans are late-breaking voters. Democrat base is pretty much built in. It is almost guaranteed. Trump's entire path to victory is a path of persuasion on top of a path of building and motivating a base that needs to come out and turn out in record numbers. And I also, a lot of the pollsters, I think, get wrong the way that they sample Trump supporters. A lot of Trump supporters are not likely to participate in polls. We saw this in 2016. Now, also in 2016, I was one of the people that actually accurately predicted. You can go back into my tweet where I published it. I got under such repudiation and condemnation from the intelligentsia when I said Donald Trump was going to win. Now, I didn't get the entire map correctly, but I said that Donald Trump was going to win Michigan. I went to 270towin.com. I filled it in correctly. Now, I did this because I was actually spending a lot of time in Michigan. I spoke to human beings in Michigan. I saw something happening in Michigan that was so special, unlike anything I had experienced in my short career in politics leading up to that. But most importantly, I looked at the crosstabs and I looked at how they were tabulating the polling. And the polling that they were doing in Michigan, similar to how a lot of these experts have been wrong about so much in the last couple months and so much in the last couple years, they said that they had Donald Trump losing the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And anyone who's been in the Midwest like I have and knows what the Upper Peninsula of Michigan actually is. So just so you know, Michigan is like a mitt, not like Mitt Romney, his family is from Michigan. But if you put up your hand, that's basically the map of Michigan. Okay, it's an old joke, and you ask people, where do you live in Michigan? But there's actually an entire part of Michigan that people don't always talk about, which is called the Upper Peninsula, which is actually contiguous with the northern part of Wisconsin. This is basically like Alabama near Canada. Okay, it is the most conservative part of the entire Midwest. I mean, I think it's a requirement to live in the Upper Peninsula for you to have a firearm. I mean, there's some amazing parts. There's Marquette, Sault Ste. Marie. I have some friends that have been from there. These are people that generally are very, very pro Donald Trump's message. They're very pro Second Amendment, pro individual initiative, pro America. The fact that the crosstabs in 2016 said that Donald Trump was going to lose the Upper Peninsula, and it was and the statewide polling had Trump within the margin of error. I said Donald Trump's going to win the state of Michigan. There's no way. And actually, it came out on Election Day. He won the Upper Peninsula by a massive margin. And so, if you go into the crosstabs, sometimes they're just not sampling parts of the state correctly. The people that they're able to get on the phone from those states are not indicative of how counties make up a broader complexion of an entire state. And so pollsters are supposed to factor that in, but sometimes they're under a lot of pressure. Sometimes they're under deadlines to get polling published, and they're not always able to get accurate sampling sizes of certain parts of the state. And that's understandable, but I also think that there are suppression polls. So right now, the RCP average has Joe Biden up 8.5 points over Donald Trump, 50-41%. So look, I'm not going to say that's a good thing. I mean, I don't necessarily believe it's that poll right now. I don't believe it's that margin right now. I think I've talked to some people that are in the polling industry, and I've seen some people on cable television that have said that the internal polls on both campaigns show it much tighter than that. But let's say that Donald Trump is down right now. It's understandable. The news cycle has been so disfavorable for what Trump wants to achieve and what he's trying to convey to the American people. We understand that we have some ground to make up, but it's not as bad as I think people are making it seem. But a poll in Minnesota had Trump down only 5. And this was all before the riots and the destruction. The state is in play. And look, yesterday we went over a bunch of points that explained why there is a reason for hope. And we covered the idea of suppression polls. And I encourage you to go back and check out that podcast. It was very in-depth of how these polls are actually done. But what if the polls are right? What does Trump have to do to actually correct course? But let's pretend that the polls are half right. Let's say that instead of being down 13 points in Michigan, or instead of being down 16 points in Michigan, or instead of being down 2 points in North Carolina, let's just cut it all in half. Okay, let's pretend that he has some margin to make up. Well, then what? Well, first of all, rallies are imperative. I think that President Trump is the best offensive political player in modern American history. He's the best person that goes on offense. He is not Dennis Rodman. Okay, he's not very good at playing defense. He's not good at locking down the Democrats. Instead, he's good at putting them on defense. He's good at making them play on the terms of engagement of his agenda, his doctrine, like I articulated in my book, MAGA Doctrine. Secondly, the Democrats and the media, they're dictating the entire rules of engagement. They're saying these are the issues that you have to talk about. These are the executive orders you have to sign. And here are the things that you must communicate. So look, today Jim Acosta tried to peddle this lie to Kayleigh McEnany, who we've had on the Charlie Kirk Show. I encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. And she absolutely ran circles around him on the hypocrisy. Play tape.
Yes. In the last day, 96 people in Tulsa have contracted the coronavirus. Wondering about this rally coming up on Saturday. Will the president or the White House take responsibility if people get sick and catch the coronavirus at this rally on Saturday?
So the campaign has taken certain measures to make sure this is a safe rally. Temperature checks, hand sanitizers, and masks. So we are taking precautions.
But you're not requiring people.
They will be given a mask. It's up to them whether to make that decision. CDC guidelines are recommended, but not required.
And CDC guidelines suggest that people practice social distancing. You're not going to be able to practice social distancing in a rally with thousands of people. So aren't you, in essence, bringing people to a rally where they won't be abiding by
It's the personal choice of individuals as to what to do. But if we want to talk about internal coherence, I believe that the media needs to work on internal coherence. This wonderful New York Post story, I don't think Stephen Nelson's here, but good job to the New York Post, highlights the hypocrisy of the media where this is okay, protesting. This is not okay, Trump rallies. It's really remarkable, and I think the American people have taken notice when, for instance, NBC tweets at 4:05 p.m. On June 14th, rally for Black Trans Lives draws packed crowd to Brooklyn Museum Plaza, seeming to be lauding the protests. And then less than an hour and a half later, they say President Trump plans to rally, but health experts are questioning that decision. CBS had a similar logically inconsistent tweet.
So look, here's the real beauty from the alleged conservative Jennifer Rubin, who is, she just play acts a conservative. It's rather humorous at this point. And it was published in the Washington Post. She said, Trump is acting like he doesn't care if people die. Again, it's so baseless. It's wrong. It's silly. And it's really pernicious, to be honest with you. And she said this, honestly, do they care about the lives of their supporters? It's a legitimate question, since they're doing everything possible to put people at risk. And for what? A rally in a safe state? Trump's narcissism prevents him from considering the interests of others, even if the damage to them is grave and the benefit is minimal. So Rubin continued by saying, Republicans lamely make the false equivalence that this is no different from the rallies and the protest of George Floyd's killing. No, it's not the same. The rallies were outside and many protesters wore masks. The cause was to spur action to save lives. That's Jennifer Rubin, the alleged conservative from the Washington Post. Reminder, just like Kaylee said, everyone who enters the rally will be given a mask and has an option to wear it. And as Devin Nunez pointed out in our sister episode that drops today, which I really encourage you to check out, a lot of these masks worn by protesters and rioters are no more than a thin sheet of cloth, more intended to shield their identity or match their designer outfit than protect themselves from the virus. Jennifer Rubin, you're the worst. I don't know why you call yourself a conservative. In fact, you might be the affirmative action hire at the Washington Post, but you're awful. But even beyond the rallies, economic indicators are pointing in the correct and right direction for a perfectly timed V-shaped recovery, which bodes really well for the president's reelection. But how can we beat confused, corrupt, somewhat mentally crippled, cadgerly person named Joe Biden? I've been saying it for months now. We have to play offense as a party, not just the president. The proactive police reform measures are a very good place to start. Now's the time to make a push for school choice for black kids. Five words that can win the president reelection. So look, you put the Democrats on the record opposing opportunity for those kids' future. You make them put their kente cloth where their mouth is and prove that black lives really do matter to them. So look, there's a lot of polls out there that might make you kind of depressed of the direction that the election is going. But there's so much political conversation and so much ground that has left to be determined of where it's going to go. And it is my opinion that the president is still in a very good position to win this election. Joe Biden right now, as being the person that's ahead in the polls, feels a lot like Hillary Clinton in 2016, having clear and convincing and persuasive arguments to the American people as to why four more years are essential and necessary, and to put the Democrats on defense again. Now, President Trump just signed a police reform measure, but before I get into that, I want to tell you about our friends at PCmatic. PCmatic is a whitelist, next-generation antivirus software designed to stop modern threats like ransomware. Independent testing from AB Test just named PCmatic as a top performer in the cybersecurity industry, giving it the Best Performance Award for 2019. Only PCmatic has American research, development, and support. They're made in America by Americans for Americans. They block annoying and malicious ads for hassle-free web browsing and makes your computers faster and more reliable even after years of use. PCmatic is just $50 for five devices for 1 year with a full 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you act now, PCmatic has offered my listeners a free month of security protection with the purchase of an annual license. To access this offer, go to PCmatic.com/Charlie. Again, to get world-class security to keep your computers running great, go to PCmatic.com/Charlie. PCmatic.com/Charlie. So President Trump just signed a police reform executive order that will encourage law enforcement agencies to implement best practices and protect the communities they serve. I generally do not like going out of the way to appease the media and the left. I understand why the president did this. I think there are some actually good measures within this executive order. However, I think now's the time to stand the ground for our law enforcement officers, for our police officers and their families. They generally do a very good job for their communities. And in fact, they have brought down violent crime over the last 20 years as we've increased police presence. Now, under this executive order, the attorney general will allocate certain grant funding to only those law enforcement agencies that meet very high standards. The executive order provides incentives for law enforcement agencies to use as a nationwide database to track terminations, criminal convictions, and civil judgments. Now, the administration will prioritize training and other programs for police and social workers responding to incidents. President Trump is directing his administration to develop and propose new legislation to Congress to further the policies of law and order and build community engagement. So look, President Trump also privately met with the families of several black Americans who were killed in interactions with police before his signing ceremony in the Rose Garden. He said he was very grieved over the lives that were lost, and he communicated to the families his sympathy. And I think this is a great move by him. And I think that it was something that really was done at the right time. Play tape.
I've just concluded a meeting with incredible families, just incredible families that have been through so much. The families of Ahmaud Arbery, Botham Jean, Antoine Rose, Jamel Roberson, Adiana Jefferson, Michael Dean, Darius Tarver, Cameron Lamb, and Everett Palmer. These are incredible people, incredible people. And it's so sad. Many of these families lost their loved ones in deadly interactions with police. To all of the hurting families, I want you to know that all Americans mourn by your side. Your loved ones will not have died in vain. We are one nation. We grieve together and we heal together. I can never imagine your pain or the depth of your anguish, but I can promise to fight for justice for all of our people. And I gave a commitment to all of those families today with Senator Tim Scott and Attorney General Bill Barr. We are going to pursue what we said. We will be pursuing it, and we will be pursuing it strongly, Tim, right?
So, look, in an effort to head off more of the radical legislation by House Democrats who are in kente cloth kneeling right outside of the House floor in the lobby of the House of Representatives, which, of course, except for Jerry Nadler, for a reason that you could figure out yourself, Senate Republicans are trying to propose their own, more toned-down legislation. So this is from Fox News. Quote, Senate Republicans on Wednesday unveiled their, quote, Justice Act, police reform legislation to hold officers accountable with an enhanced use of force database, pursue restrictions on chokeholds, and create new commissions to study law enforcement and race. Senator Tim Scott, who is the only black Republican senator, but that's really deceiving because there's only three black senators, and one of them is Cory Booker, the other is Senator Harris, and the other is Senator Tim Scott. So I don't like calling him the only African-American senator. I just think it's very deceiving. There's not that many of them, and so I don't like that wordage. However, it says that he is pushing forth the legislation. And so, look, as an aside, Senator Tim Scott has been the subject of so much veiled racism since the George Floyd killing, from white liberals, by the way. White liberals have been going after Senator Tim Scott because they don't think he's black because he's not a Democrat. I wonder if somebody said that recently. You know, if only Joe Biden said something like that. So Senator Tim Scott is always referenced, even in conservative outlets, by his race. They always include it. And then you see how the Democrats discuss him. They outright call him the token black senator. Check out this Twitter exchange where Dick Durbin, the second-ranking Senate Democrat, referred to Senator Tim Scott as a token approach. That's a white liberal from Illinois who's calling Senator Tim Scott a token. And Senator Tim Scott responded very firmly and I think actually roasted him on Twitter and said, y'all still wearing those kente cloths over there, Senator Durbin? Good for you, Senator Tim Scott, holding the line. The Democrats, who are the real racists, they always have been, and they still to this day are hyper-fixated on race. They can't help themselves. The Democrats have always thought race is a predominant quality of the human experience and existence. Republicans have always thought your character, your spirituality, your actions, and your worldview is actually how you should be judged. Like these little Freudian slips from Senator Durbin and former Vice President Joe Biden, they say so much about how they are obsessed with the issue of race. They make everyone else in America become a hyper-racial society. We want to be a post-racial society. Their entire worldview is formed by the conceptions of class and race, that somehow if you are black, by definition, you can't break out of being on the lower portion of the income distribution, which is just not anywhere close to being true and not even close to being what our future will be. This has betrayed Martin Luther King's admission, quote, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation that will not be judged by the color of their skin, by the contents of their character. I have a dream today. So we achieved that when I was in high school. Actually, people were generally not judged by the color of their skin, but instead on the actions they're making. Now we're getting back into the racist society that we tried to get rid of. But here we are. And Senate Republicans are now forced to agree with the rules of engagement because they're not holding the ground like they did with the attacks against Brett Kavanaugh. So look, we have to have our own piece of legislation because we failed to fight this narrative at the beginning of the riots and the protests. Instead of having our Republican Party united on a piece of legislation for school choice for black kids or the reunification of the black family, now we're playing on their terrain, and we will guarantee you we will lose when we fight on the left's terrain. So instead of rejecting the premise and dismissing it like we did with Kavanaugh, now we have to play defense. So look, I like Senator Scott, but I do not like having to succumb to a lie. Senator McConnell and Lindsey Graham are both stressing the immediate need for the bill, and I just think they're just pandering. And look, here's Senator Scott's statement on the bill. He said, quote, "The answer to the question of which side do you support is, I support America. And if you support America, you support restoring the confidence that communities of color have in institutions of authority." And I'm sighing because they don't have a lack of support in institutions of authority because of the legislation. They have it because of people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson that have been endlessly trying to demean and debase the sort of belief that we have in our systems of authority. If you support America, that means you know that the overwhelming number of officers in this nation want to do their job, go home to their family. It is not a binary choice. This legislation encompasses that spirit. Scott said the overwhelming number of officers in America are good people. Thank you for saying that, Senator Scott. I totally agree. But he acknowledged that real fears people of color have encountering the police. He said, "We hear you. We are listening to your concerns." I mean, come on. Why are you saying that? They have concerns in encountering black police officers? I don't find that to be statistically or anecdotally true at all. I mean, more black people are alive in New York City because of an increased police presence. The George Floyd incident certainly accelerated this conversation. So look, here's where we're at. I think this issue has been so culturally convulsive that we've already ceded way too much ground and that we have to recapture the leadership position. From a messaging standpoint, Republicans have always been the party of criminal justice reform, of liberation, and of civil rights. We've always helped minority communities. We passed the First Step Act. We have, in fact, passed historic funding for historical black college universities for opportunity zones. And Democrats and the anti-racism activists, they claim the bill does not go far enough. They want to ban the use of chokeholds completely. The bill also does not address the issue of qualified immunity, which gives police officers some protections in cases where the use of force becomes excessive. The president has called this issue a non-starter. Good for him. That's the president at his best. Imagine how few police officers were able to recruit in this current climate. And next, we'll want to tell people to put their lives on the line if they have to use force against a black or brown person. They'll lose their career reputation, or lose any legal protection we've given them. I just want to say, I want to give a shout out to our police officers, and you guys can go to charliekirk.com, buy a shirt that says Police Officers Matter, and the proceeds and the profits of that shirt go to the families of David Dorn and Patrick Underwood and other black police officers that were killed in the riots and the unrest that have happened in recent weeks. I can't imagine how hard it is for a police officer to go to work every single day, and you wonder, man, if I have to draw my side firearm and use this, I might have my family, my own life ruined forever, even if I'm protecting myself. And look, when the Democrats are going after the police officers, they have another thing coming because they have to confront the powerful public sector employee unions to get these reforms passed. And so if you want to go after the police, you're going to have to go after a very well-funded, well-organized, and motivated order of fraternal police. And that's basic. And they have their own union, and they have their own police union, and they have saved plenty of money through the years. They are very well-connected politically, and they are a public sector union. And look, they have the most expensive lawyers that you can imagine. They have them on retainer. And I'm just going to say right now that the public sector unions of the police officers, they're not going to go down without a fight. And by the way, the Democrats created these unions. The Democrats created these very same unions that disallowed us from being able to fire Derek Chauvin, that didn't allow us to be able to fire the worst of the police force. And that is because of Democrat public sector union pandering. So look, there's going to be a continued conversation about law enforcement, but there's going to be huge opposition for the Democrats, big time, because they're going to go after one of their core constituencies. Maybe they think that, you know, police officer votes don't matter and that they want to go towards the votes of the swarm and the mob. I think that's a miscalculation. I think the president can win a lot of police officers, especially in these critical battleground states. And there's been a lot of news happening around how things are going to impact the presidential election, including the Supreme Court ruling. And I want to get into that because we've gotten so many emails at freedom@charliekirk.com. But first, I want to tell you, there's no shortage of action going on with our exclusive partners at betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making its way back with UFC, boxing, NASCAR, and soccer leading the way, and BetOnline has all the best odds and lines for the upcoming games and matches. If you need more, BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening every day for you to check out. If you look for something else other than sports, BetOnline also has hundreds of live casino games, poker, and all the best props in the business. Visit betonline.ag or use your mobile device and join now to receive your new welcome bonus and start playing today. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of this. BetOnline, don't forget that promo code Podcast One. BetOnline, your online sports experts. I can't wait for sports to get back. It'll be a big part of the renewal of America. So we've gotten a lot of questions at freedom@charliekirk.com. It says, Charlie, what is going on with the Supreme Court? So first of all, every June is always the most dramatic month for Supreme Court decisions. This is where a lot of the cases are decided and released. Actually, usually decided a couple months prior, but they write their opinions, and June is when they release them, and then the Supreme Court justices go travel the country. July and August, and they take some time off. So this was the big decision that happened recently. In a landmark 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court stunningly decided through Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act to make a decision around LGBT and gay individuals, saying that it can be interpreted to include discrimination protection based for transgender individuals and gay individuals, whereas previously it was just around race and religion, and also around male and female, which is the whole point of this entire decision. We'll get to that in 1 second. Remember, there's only two genders. Now, Justice Neil Gorsuch, a Trump appointee, incredibly wrote for the majority. I'm so stunned by this. I'm going to be honest. If I were to actually guess which of the Trump-appointed Supreme Court justices was going to side with the leftist justices, I thought for sure it would be Brett Kavanaugh. Went to Georgetown Prep. He went to Yale. He served on the D.C. Circuit Court. He was a Bush appointee. He worked in the Bush White House. Definitely was going to be Brett Kavanaugh, right? No, it was Neil Gorsuch, the guy that didn't serve in the D.C. Circuit, who's from Colorado. And I guess Gorsuch is more of a libertarian, but this interpretation is so incredibly anti-constitutional. It's extra-constitutional. Now, if you ask me if a specific piece of legislation should be passed to address this, I might be able to have that conversation. However, it is not the Supreme Court's role to now make legislation, and they've been doing judicial activism on this issue. And so he joined the four other leftist anti-American justices, Elena Kagan, Soyona Sotomayor, Stephen Breyer, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who couldn't find a correct ruling if it was right in front of them. No matter what the decision in front of them is, those four justices will side with what is worst for America. It is assured. Now, Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, who is used to turning his back on the American people and on the conservative base, he did what he basically automatically does now, which is side with his best friends Kagan, Sotomayor, Breyer, and Ginsburg. But man, Gorsuch, what are you doing? And I've read parts of his opinion here, and I just fundamentally disagree with it. He thinks that these protections should now be applied to someone who magically wakes up one morning and thinks that they're a man or a woman, despite their biological creation. Your opinion, your own choice around gender, should not all of a sudden get special protections by the federal government. Again, this is about the interpretation of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. You might not like the law, but then that's for Congress to fix. The Supreme Court interprets the law. It does not make the law. Kavanaugh, Alito, and Clarence Thomas, the three patriots, God bless them all. My goodness. They ruled correctly here. They argued in a dissenting opinion the following, and it was really well said, I have to say. I agree with almost all of this. While the court may believe it is achieving a judicious result, that the same result could have and should have come through legislation and a specific congressional change to Title VII rather than through the courts, and that the word, quote, sex cannot be read to include sexual orientation or gender identity. Good for you guys. My gosh, that took courage to write. I think Kavanaugh was radicalized during that whole process. I think we have based Kavanaugh, who is not, he's not going to play ball with these guys anymore. He's like, you probably tried to destroy my family, and now I recognize what you're trying to do to our country. God bless you, Brett Kavanaugh. Quote, the court tries to convince readers that is merely enforcing the terms of the statute, but that is preposterous, Alito wrote. God bless Alito. And it continues, even as understood today, the concept of discrimination because of, quote, sex is different from the discrimination because of sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, mind you, what do Brett Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas have in common? They both almost had their nominations destroyed by left-wing mobs in the United States Senate. Now, look, this is a travesty of the court, and frankly, this really weakens the argument for Trump being elected with evangelicals because of judges. Textualism is where you allow an individual to read into the text of the law or the Constitution beyond the intent of the writers of the law and apply culture's evolving definition or standards. This is where you get activist judges, and this is very wrong. This is not how conservatives view the law, nor should we. We don't apply our own standards. We read the law as it was intended, not as how things are today. Look, we read it strictly as they wrote it. We can't deduce the necessary conclusion from the way the law is written or if you don't like what the law is. It's not some sort of postmodern my truth. It's what does the law say? If you don't like it, go back to Congress. And Rush said aptly, quote, "What happened yesterday at the Supreme Court may be the biggest sellout of conservatism by conservative justice in the history of the Supreme Court on four different issues." And he's 100% correct. And by the way, the Supreme Court also refused to consider the Trump administration's challenge to a California law limiting state and local cooperation with federal immigration authorities regarding the infamous sanctuary city policies. This has not received the one-tenth the coverage of the LGBTQ ruling, but it's also a very bad development for America. The case, which would have been heard next fall or winter, raised the broad issue of whether state and local governments can effectively provide sanctuary to undocumented immigrants, or I call them foreign national illegal lawbreakers in our country, threatened with arrest or deportation by ICE, and they should all be deported from our country. Now, once again, Associate Justice Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissented. President Donald Trump's two high court nominees, Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, did not register dissents. Now, the Justice Department argued rightly, quote, "Allowing federal immigration officials access to undocumented immigrants, the state simply needs to remain neutral," end quote. And that, quote, "the state law openly seeks to undermine federal immigration enforcement." This is, of course, correct. And the federal government must set immigration policy, not the states. You can't come to California under one law and then freely travel and work and maybe even vote in other states that have different laws. That's what a federal government is for. We have the Civil Rights Act that says you can't have protections under the Civil Rights Act in California, but not Maine. We don't have unified immigration policy. That is the role of the federal government. If you're in a country, you have to have the same laws under that country. And look, there's also the issue of crime. As Solicitor General Noel Francisco argued in court papers, quote, "when officers are unable to arrest aliens, often criminal aliens who are in removal proceedings or have been ordered removed from the United States, those aliens instead return to the community where criminal aliens are disproportionately likely to commit crimes," end quote. Now, what is California's response? "We hate Trump so much that we want to let illegals come in, live in America, screw the federal law." They also make the weak argument that you've clamped down on illegal immigration. People living in those communities won't talk to the police. Now, this is a weak argument for a few reasons. Just as we're discussing with Black Lives Matter, it's often the families in these communities that want the criminals out the most. If you don't enforce your laws, you get chaos. Either our immigration system means something or none of the laws mean anything at all whatsoever. And so, look, what we have right now is a group of conservative justices, for whatever reason, you can make your own conjecture, you can make your own interpretation. They're trying to appease some sort of leftist intelligentsia. There is no way that you can make a fair and impartial textual interpretation of how they came to the conclusions that they did. Here's my guiding principle on this. If Clarence Thomas rules and the conservative justices disagree with Clarence Thomas, there's something wrong with them. Not with the interpretation. Clarence Thomas is my North Star here. Clarence Thomas is an American hero. And if you don't know who Clarence Thomas is, some teacher somewhere did something immoral to you to not teach you about Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas is a Black conservative Supreme Court justice that has been slandered, lied about, silenced, and ignored by the mainstream press. He is one of the most phenomenal American heroes in the history of the country. I have an opportunity to meet him. And I've just found him so nice. He's so magnanimous. He's so kind. And the left hates him. He is the American hero of our time. I really believe that. And Donald Trump is as well. But Clarence Thomas has been through so much. So if Clarence Thomas rules a certain way, and Kavanaugh or Gorsuch or Alito or Roberts disagree with Clarence Thomas, what's wrong with you? Because Clarence Thomas gives zero. The radicalization of Clarence Thomas happened when they tried to destroy him and when they tried to, in his own words, have a high-tech lynching of a Black man. And he slammed it down and they held the line strong. God bless Clarence Thomas. He doesn't care. There's nothing else they can possibly slander him. But maybe for Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, that kind of public opinion pressure impacts him a lot. I don't know where Gorsuch gets off on this, and I'm really disappointed. I hope he makes up for it in a future decision, because this is disturbing and wrong. So now here's your digital annihilation cultural cancellation update. Aunt Jemima has been totally eliminated. Revisionist history strikes again. PepsiCo said it will drop the image of Aunt Jemima, rebrand the line of the pancake mix and syrup that has borne the name since 1889. The parent of the Quaker Oats Company, which has owned the brand since 1926, did not specify what the new name will be or what the updating package will look like. I don't understand. We're canceling black people now? Isn't that racist? The left would rather cancel a bottle of syrup than a Democrat governor who actually either wore blackface or the KKK hood. We still don't know. We're waiting for an answer from Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, whether it was blackface or the KKK hood. We hope to hear back sometime soon, but we probably won't. So I don't understand the stereotype. Are African Americans not to be allowed to be brand mascots? I mean, if they were all white people would say that they're white supremacists and they'd want a black person on it. There's no rules here. And if the reason there's no rules is they don't have any guiding principles because they don't have an agreed upon morality or a book that tells them what is right or wrong. That's why we have the Bible. That's why we have the Constitution to say, no, this is right. This is wrong. These are our guiding principles. The left, they have all sorts of different pieces of foolish backwards literature. They have no North Star. Now, corporate America's woke view of society is, when you think about it, unbelievably offensive. And I'm not one to easily get offended, but it's offensive. How weak do they think America is that our sensibilities would be offended by a syrup bottle? How weak are we presenting ourselves to be where they would think that? In reporting on this decision, NBC quoted Richie Richardson, an associate professor at Cornell University, who said Aunt Jemima is, quote, a retrograde image of black womanhood on our store shelves, end quote. So I guess less black representation in corporate America is a good thing. It's an image that harkens back to the antebellum plantation, he said. Aunt Jemima is that of a stereotype that is premised on the idea of black inferiority and otherness, Richardson said. I mean, that takes such incredible intellectual and historical calisthenics. You sound like a really unhappy person. He says, quote, it is urgent to expunge our public spaces of a lot of these symbols that for some people are triggering and represent terror and abuse, he declared. The mental gymnastics at this point is exhausting. But is it really urgent, Professor Richardson? Is it really as urgent as you say? Black Americans are killing each other at alarming rates. Black businesses are being burned down to the ground. Thousands of black babies are being aborted every single week. Yet to the leftist woke crowd, it is urgent to cancel Aunt Jemima. This is the perfect example of what happens when you do not have guiding truth. Again, this is why the Bible matters. So mind you, do I actually care that they're getting rid of Aunt Jemima? Not necessarily, but it is part of a tapestry of destruction. It's part of a continual removal campaign by the radical left, and we know where this leads. It's part of a playbook. Read their literature. They do this intentionally. They start small to go big. And if you don't fight early, they will destroy you eventually. And while we're on the subject of rewriting history, Senator Tim Kaine said something absolutely reprehensible, despicable, and categorically false on the floor of the United States Senate. Play tape.
The United States didn't inherit slavery from anybody. We created it. It got created by the Virginia General Assembly and the legislatures of other states. It got created by the court systems in colonial America and since that enforced fugitive slave laws. We created it. And we created it and maintained it over centuries. And in my lifetime, we have finally stopped some of those practices, but we've never gone back to undo it. Stopping racist practices at year 350 of 400 years, but then taking no effort to dismantle them is not the same as truly combating racism.
Well, that's right. Democrats actually believe that we invented slavery. I mean, slavery is thousands of years old. And by the way, those pyramids that were built by, guess what, slaves, like 3,000 years ago, more like 4,000 years ago, actually. And by the way, how about the where we get the word slave from? It's the Latin term Slav, because the Slavic people were often forced into what we now know as slavery in the Middle Ages. And Tim Kaine is just another radical left-wing Democrat who appears to be getting his news from the 1619 Project. But here's a piece of information that they won't teach you in your schools. 1 year after the Declaration of Independence was signed and sent to King George, 1 year after, where it says the laws of nature and nature's God, our birth certificate, the state of Vermont abolished slavery. It was America that began the process of abolishing slavery, not inventing slavery. It was our country that abolished slavery, that sent ripple effects all across the entire world where we were able to say no more to this evil sin. It was the Bible that inspired it. It was the American experience that abolished it. And yeah, we didn't live up to that promise the first 100 years of our country, but we fulfilled it. We abolished slavery. We passed the Civil Rights Act. And if you look in a historical context, 100 years is a very short period of time. The fact that we abolished slavery within 100 years of our country's formation and the founding of our country is incredible. That actually goes to show that the country was founded on the abolition of trying to get rid of slavery, not the opposite of it. They say, well, this country was founded on slavery. No, it was founded while slavery was happening, but a year after we signed the Declaration of Independence, we were abolishing slavery, and we were already having discussion around this idea of natural rights. In fact, the idea of slavery was 5,000 years old at the time. We still have slavery happening right now around the world. This is such revisionist, pernicious, anti-American activist history by Senator Tim Kaine. But I wouldn't expect anything else from someone who serves in the same state as someone who either wore a KKK hood or blackface and is still the governor of Virginia, as someone who represents a party that owns slaves, that opposed the 13th and the 14th Amendment, that opposed the Civil Rights Act, that opposed everything that we know to be good as successful movements of morality in America. The left has opposed it every single turn. But Senator Tim Kaine wouldn't know that because he's a fool. And he's a fool that thankfully is not vice president of the United States. Email me your questions, everybody. freedom@charliekirk.com. You leave us those 5-star reviews. Subscribe, screenshot us, and send us those emails, freedom@charliekirk.com. We'll send you a copy of the MAGA Doctrine. First 20 people that do that, signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. Get involved with Turning Point USA. Go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. It is the most important culture fight of our time. We are educating the next generation on first principles every single day. tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless you. God bless our country. We are going to win. They are going to lose. Stand for truth. Be courageous. Talk to you soon. God bless.